Okay, so I know the full topic is, is it Shabbistic? But we didn't get up to Hilchos Avdalah, so I figured we'd cover some Hilchos Avdalah. So the title page, the title, if you would have the title, actually says Avdalah and is it Shabbistic? So just a few halachos in Hilchos Avdalah that are that I think are practical. The main one, I mean, one thing that causes a lot of confusion is what is the status of women with regards to Havdalah? Like there's like this thing out there, like what's the story with women? Do you do it? Do they don't drink the wine? Or what's going on there? So source number one, which you don't have, is the following. Nashim chayvos b'havdalah k'shem shechayvos b'kiddush v'yesh mi shecholik. That the Shulchan Aruch says that women are obligated in Havdalah just as they are obligated in Kiddush. However, there are those that disagree. So when the Shulchan Aruch makes a line like that, this is the halacha, however, there are those that say X. So what is he really saying? He's really saying that I really hold the first way, and this, there are those, is an opinion that's out there. Maybe you'll take it into account. We'll see how we take it into account. But
does
we don't
that mean a significant opinion?
So, is it a significant opinion? It's somebody that...
it down?
Right. It was somebody who was very smart, who lived already before the time of the Shulchan Aruch, and is in his canon. So it is the Orchos Chaim. That's who it is. Who is the Orchos Chaim? His mother didn't call him Orchos Chaim La. I'm not sure. But he's quoted often in the Beis Yosef. He is a regular, upstanding, wise man who wrote a book, and in there he writes that women are not obligated in Havdalah like they are by everything else. Why? What's his reasoning? So his reasoning is also a little bit unclear. It's a very small. I don't have a copy of Orchos Chaim, but in the Beis Yosef's quotation of it, all he says is, well, this idea that women are obligated in all the mitzvahs of Shabbos, just like men, maybe that only applies to things that are on Shabbos. But this is not actually on Shabbos anymore, so maybe it doesn't apply. Now, it's a little bit difficult to comprehend, because the mitzvah of Havdalah is based on the idea of Zachor's Yom HaShabbos Lekach. The same thing that Kiddush is, the same place we get Kiddush is where we get Havdalah from, that we recognize Shabbos when you come in, and recognize any point that Shabbos when it leaves. So why there should be any difference between the two has many, many people scratching their heads. So mostly people scratch their heads for a while, they might stroke their beards as well, and then they say, well, the Orchos Chaim says it, so we'll take it into account. Okay, it usually doesn't cause an I would say usually, it often doesn't cause an issue because, so what's the big deal? So the man will make Havdalah, he'll be Yotzi the woman, and everything will be wonderful. There really shouldn't be any ramifications to that. Except for situations where there are ramifications. So what would be a situation where there would be a ramification, right? If the man is out of town, if the man is, if there is no man, the man passes away, the man is gone, or the man maybe made kiddush and shul, made havdalah and shul. So are any of those things issues? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the idea that why should this be any different than any other mitzvahs that women do, right? Mitzvahs are exempt from plenty of mitzvahs, and yet they go ahead and they do those anyways. However, what is the difference? What could possibly be the difference? Well, there isn't. A woman could go ahead and do the mitzvah, that would be fine, but for a man to be yotzei a woman when the man has already been yotzei the mitzvah, so maybe he shouldn't go ahead and do that. That's the main ramification of that you should avoid a situation where a man is being yotzei a woman when the man was already fulfilled his mitzvah, because maybe he's not fulfilling anything. Maybe there's nothing else to, there's nothing to do. So where does that, so what do we do? And so in shul, when we have, we make havdalah at the end of the davening, so we usually have somebody who's not going to be yotzei somebody else at home, a son of somebody, or somebody whose wife is out of town, or doesn't have a wife, right? Somebody who's not going to be making havdalah later, so therefore we have that person do havdalah in shul. What happens if none of those people are around? So, practically speaking, we say, very nice that the Orchos Chaim is a very important opinion, he was a very pious individual, but we don't really paskel like him. Right? At the end of the day, women are obligated in havdalah. Okay, so now what? So, man was yotzi already. Should he be yotzi? Should he say it again on behalf of the woman? Well, the Mishnah Berurah recommends. Ideally, a woman should do it herself. Right, a woman should just do the havdalah herself in order to avoid this issue. However, at the However, at the end of the day, he says, if you need to, so you need to, the man, it's more important that a woman hear Abdullah than that the man not make Abdullah for her. Right? So a man will be Yotzi her on her behalf. The Aruch HaShulchan even adds in, and Shmuel Kanetsky quotes this in his Sefer, that he thinks that this is the practical halacha as well, that there are women who just don't do it by themselves. Like, they've never done it by themselves, and they don't want to do it by themselves. My parents have somebody who lives around the block from them, that she's an almana, she's a widow. She refuses to kiddush by for herself, she refuses to Havdalah for herself, so every Shabbos, so my father or somebody else on the block will go and make Kiddush and Havdalah for her because she refuses to do it by herself. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that is actually the minhag. So yes, there is this concept out there that the woman should, that women aren't chayiv and therefore maybe they shouldn't make it at all, or at least only try to find a man to be Yotzi them, but push comes to shove, Lemaisa, we would. Ideally, a woman should make it for herself, and the second ideal is that the man will just do it on her behalf, but she should be hearing Havdalah. I mean, everybody agrees, not everybody, the Ruchus Chaim maybe doesn't, but everybody else since the 1400s agrees that that a woman should be hearing Havdalah, just maybe we might take that opinion of the Ruchus Chaim into account. There is this famous story that is out there. I'm not sure it's a print or it's actually ever been actually documented, but the Chafetz Chaim's daughter was living in Eretz Yisrael, I think daughter, maybe granddaughter, and she was a widow, and she used to have a yeshiva bacher come all the time and make kiddush for her and make Havdalah for her. So one time the yeshiva bacher comes, and she gives him the cup and says, "No, make kiddush," and he looks at it, and he says, "I think the cup is too small. It's not large enough." So she said, "Listen, it might not be large enough for you, but that is the cup the Chafetz Chaim used to make Kiddush." and kind of didn't have much patience for this young man raising issues about whether she should be using a cup. So, okay, so this idea is out there that they won't do it for themselves. Whatever. I remember there was one time, I don't remember why this happened, but I remember we were at Chava's parents' house and there was some kind of miscommunication. I heard Abdullah at shul. I figured I wasn't going to be home in time. Oh, that's what it is. And then, so I was wondering, why were we in shul? So then Chava came to pick me up at shul and she hadn't heard of Abdullah, but she figured I'd be making it for her. Right? So now, so which is better? Right? Is it better? Psak. Lisa, is it better for me to do it with her having been Yotzei already? Is it better for her to make it by herself? Right, so remember there one happened to be a Rebbe there, Rebbe Talbis, and he said she should do it herself, and that is and drink the wine. Now there is this issue out there. I figured I would raise that as well. There is this issue out there that women shouldn't drink the wine of Havdalah. Is that based on anything? The answer is yes. If you look in the Magen Avraham and in Hilchos Havdalah, the Magen Avraham says there is a minhag that the women don't drink the Havdalah wine. Why? So look at the Shlach. He doesn't tell you where to look in the Shlach. He just says, look in the Shlach is a very big book. Several volumes, in fact. So in this Sefer, he tells you, he says in the back, he has a little essay here about women making Havdalah. And these little essays in the back are actually written, I think either written or transcribed from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Actually, no, the Tshuvos are. So maybe the essays are from Rabbi, the author of the book, Rabbi Simcha Benham Cohen. There's two different things. There's essays and then there's tshuvos. So in the essays, so he quotes from the Shlach that it has to do that the Havdalah, the original Havdalah between man and woman took place by way of wine. Talking about Chava giving, I assume he's referring to Chava giving Adam the apple, right? There's probably no chance that it was actually a apple, like a Red Delicious or a Macintosh or whatever. It was some other. Gemara gives several possibilities as to what it was, none of which are apple. Probably supposed to be Gemara never heard of apple, but one of those possibilities is wine or grapes. So that perhaps is that Chava gave Adam the grapes, so therefore she doesn't drink the wine. That's one suggestion. The others, and that caused the Havdalah, that caused the separation between them. The second set of suggestion that he has in here is that if women aren't obligated in Havdalah, so then you run into a brachos issue, because you make the bracha of Bar Priya Geffen, right, or Geffen, and then you do Samim, you do Eish, you twiddle your thumbs, you whatever, you do the last bracha, and if women aren't obligated in any of those things, so then what do you have? you have a hefsik, you have a separation, therefore you have a problem, you have a hilchos brachos problem from the time they make the bracha berei gevin until you actually get around to drinking the wine. So maybe that's the source for it. He raises some issues with that. I could also raise some issues with that, but those are the two suggestions out there as to this custom of women not drinking the wine. Okay, moving right along. So within Havdalah, the next thing, if my memory serves correct, is the concept of besamim, right? We do besamim, then we do H. So we make a bracha of besamim. So just one issue that I wanted to point out with besamim is all spices are good. One can use all spices. One could even use fruits and things like that. That actually have a smell. However, the bracha changes. There are several different brachos that you make for besamim. I can never keep track of all these things because I don't really have a sense of smell anyways. So I can never remember which types of things get which brachos. But if you plan on using anything other than cloves, one should try to make sure you're making the right bracha on those besamim. I think the custom to use cloves is because, at least we know on those, the bracha is barim minei besamim. So that's issue one. What about using perfume? I remember I was one time at an afraf, and the girl was there, so it must have been, I think it was like one of these week before Afraf deals, and we were making Havdalah, and then the Kala raised her, right, they put perfume here, right, so they raised her thing to the Chassan's thing, and that's what he did for Besamim. So I think that was a problem on two accounts. First of all, in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Evin Ezer, so it does talk about an Isser, about a man specifically smelling a woman's perfume that is not his wife. So that's issue number one. Issue number two is you're probably not Yotzi the smelling of Besamim. You're perhaps not Yotzi the smelling of Besamim with it, because the mitzvah, the in Hilchos smelling, in Hilchos besamim, not in the third volume of Mishnah Berurah, which is Hilchos Shabbos, but in the second volume of Mishnah Berurah, which talks about all the birchos hanenin, the brachos that the things that we enjoy. So there it talks about birchos of besamim, and it says you only make the bracha of besamim when you're actually smelling the source of the smell, when the actual clove or the actual hadas or the actual thing is there. But perfume or just taking an air freshening tree, right? So that, believe it or not, that's not actually pine, right? It's chemicals, right? So that would not qualify. That would not qualify as the summon. So perfume as well, I think he makes the point here that nobody really knows what's in perfume. Some of them are probably different, some are probably more natural than others, but unless you could ascertain that it's actual rounded up smelling things and not just things that are smelling because they came in contact with smelling things, right, you probably shouldn't be making a bracha of Bari Minei Besamim on those. I'm not an expert in these halachos.
Is the mitzvah to make that particular bracha or to smell something and make the right bracha on it?
So the options are to smell something else. The options are
to use
hadassim. In fact, the Mechaber says you specifically use hadassim. Hadassim. Yeah, he specifically suggests to use hadassim. Yeah. Next. H. Okay, so Bar Mioria H. So the one question that comes up is using electric lights. So of course we skipped Hilchos Hadlakas Neiros. Maybe we'll save that for like a Mythbusters year or something like that. But what's the story with electric lights for Havdalah? So the story goes, when Rav Chaim Ozer, when they first started with electricity, so everybody was having big fights about what is electricity in terms of Hilchos Shabbos. So the story goes that in Europe, the minhag was Dafka Rav Chaim Ozer did this specifically to use light bulbs for Havdalah in order to demonstrate that it's usher to use on Shabbos. Right, that was to make it clear to everybody. So the custom clearly was for a long time to use light bulbs. Some say that they should be really the old style light bulbs because you can actually see the filament. There is a whole question about if you're seeing the Havdalah candle through a window, whether that's appropriate or not. So if you're looking at the light bulb, so you're kind of looking it through windows, and some say, well, if you see the flame itself, so on some of those you can see the flame itself, so then that's okay. But apparently all the shilas are soon going to be muted because everybody's going to those pigtail those pigtail light bulbs, right? Or the fluorescent bulbs or the LED bulbs. So none of those actually work. Why do none of those work? Because those are not actually a flame. Those are glowing chemicals, right? I assume that's how the pigtails are, like mini fluorescent lights. Is that the case? Yeah. Now, why do they get hot, though?
They don't.
Those ones
well, they
do.
They have a ballast.
The base gets
a ballast actually gets warm.
Okay, all right.
It's not from
the gases.
Right, it's not from.
It's not from the gas because I bought a little lamp at the tag sale here a couple months ago, and it gets pretty hot. I got one of those pigtail things in there. All right. Anyways, so
switch to LED.
So I got an LED, not knowing any better, for our living room, and my father calls it the night light. So that is the story with Borim Miorei Ha'ish. So you could use light bulbs, the ones that have wicks in them. But anything that is using gas, fluorescence, and LEDs, one should not be using for Bermuda H. And I think that is pretty much all I had for Havdal.
So if it's frosted, it wouldn't work so well.
Right, so frosted as well. So ideally you should not. I think we are making it. There is an article that I tracked down, I don't even know what year it's from, but a very old RGJ journal article. That's written by Rabbi Broyd and Rabbi Jachter while they were both living in other places. Like, this is from the 80s. And it talks about using electric lights for the fulfillment of mitzvos. I came across it because in school we're learning Ksachim, and there's a little bit of an issue about using a flashlight for B'dikas Chametz. So I found this article, and he talks about Havdalah candles. And then he says, all the poskim say it's okay, except for two, Rav Avadya Yosef and Rav Moshe Feinstein. they're pretty big. I think most poskim assume that. Hey, certainly b'di'evit. I think you should certainly rely on that. There is more for Shabbos candles. There's probably even more reason to be lenient. You could probably even use fluorescent lights and stuff for Shabbos candles in this case, if it is required. Hospital stays and things like that. Okay, so Ad Kan Hilchos Havdalah. Now so when it comes to probably here for Shabbos stick, we'll be able to find it here. Okay, so now is it Shabbos stick? So when this question really has two parts. Are there any specific halachos about things regarding quote unquote Shabbos stick? And then once you get beyond that, and then so what are the guidelines in general, like, what is there any basis to make declarations and say, you know what, maybe that's not the best thing to do over the course of Shabbos? So I wish I could figure out which simon that is. I'm not sure. Tuf Kuf. I think I found it. Yes. Okay. So in Hilchos Yontif, there is a Tosfos in Maseches Beitza talks about carrying things over the course of Yontif Shelo Letzarech, and makes a comment that, oh well, if you're playing with a ball, even though there might not be an Erev up, that's okay because you're playing with a ball, and there's a use for that over the course of Yontif. So comes the later authorities, the Rama, and says, aha, right? The Tosfos just said, Beferish, right, that there is a use to playing ball on Yom Tov, that qualifies it as a use over the course of Yom Tov, so much so that if there's no Erev up, you're allowed to do that. Now, what is the point that there's no Erev up? So it is possible, actually, in a way, that the laws of carrying on Yom Tov are actually more stringent than the laws of carrying on Shabbos. That the laws of carrying on Shabbos, once there is an Erev up, so you could carry whatever you want. There's no prohibition on carrying over the course of Shabbos. However, on Yom Tov, there is a prohibition of carrying what we call Shelo Letzorech Klal. Right? Even though you don't need an Erev, you can carry whatever you need, food, siddurim, clothing, whatever. If there is no need for that carrying, one should not carry it on Yom Tov. There's an Erev. So there's actually a further machlokus whether the Erev works on Yom Tov. It's a little bit of an odd question, right? You have an Erev for Shabbos, it will also work for Yom Tov. So So practically speaking, well, practical for most people here is probably not so practical, but for us it is practical, right? We really try to remember to clean out the stroller before Yontif, right? Before Shabbos, all right? So there's some stuff hanging out in there in the baskets that's been there for a while, all right? That's such a big deal. But if for Van Yontif, it actually might be a problem of carrying on Yontif. So it discusses the idea of playing with the ball, and the Ramah comments, "Umutter lischok b'chadur afilu b'rishus harabim." You're allowed to play with a ball, even public domain. Afal gav she'inu elatil ba'alma, even though you're only having fun. Right? Even though you're only having fun. So the Mishnah Berurah comments on that, and with that, we can begin using the back of our source sheets, or in our case, the front of our source sheets, actually. It's odd. But the Mishnah Berurah comments that Ratzel Lomar, Bechadur Afilu Beshusa Rabim, Ratzel Lomar, Afa Gav de Aydeze, Rugil Lahavi, Dal Aramsi, Makam Makam, even though you're going to be carrying it from place to place. Afilu Haki Mutter, it's still permissible. Why? Dhu Bechlal, Til Vesimchas Yantif. Was it still included in Simchas Yantif? Right? Period.
We're still talking about the ball, right?
We're still talking about the ball. So we see a sort, right? What do we see? We see they're discussing playing with the ball in the context of having fun, right? And something that, so don't tell me it's not Shabbosik, the Mishnah Berurah said it's fun. Right, and there is a use for it on Yantiv. So comes the Maharshal. The Maharshal is pre Ramah Shlomo Luria, and he writes. However, Kasav the Dover Timaku Lahatirze. He says this is I wouldn't matter this. The Imbo Tzorah Hayom Kav. So it really isn't a use for the day. Elishok Shel Yiladim. Rather, it's a children's game. V'hanach lahem, and you can let them play. I mean, what did the Tosfos say? Tosfos said you're allowed to pick up a ball and carry it around, right? Because people can play with it on Yantif. Who's he talking about playing with it on Yantif? He's talking about the father can carry the ball to the park so that his children can play with it on Yantif, right? But says the Mishnah, but Mishnah Berurah is quoting the Maharshal to say he never said that adults should be running around playing ball on Yantif, right? V'hanach lahem, and let them play. About the gedolim shenogim came, but for older people that do this, min hagrahu de einza simcha v'til el asichas yiladim v'kalos rosh. Says that's not considered simcha, right? Rather, that's considered children's play and lightheadedness. Lav hachi ein din zeh muskam v'liyama, right? And not everybody agrees to this. Didas mechaber lesser. Because the Mechaber actually says to prohibit. The Mechaber is not such a fan. Says it's usher to play with a ball on Yantif. Where did he say that? So he says that in Simen Shin Ches. Now Simen Shin Ches takes you back from the laws of Yantif and brings you back into the laws of Shabbos. Simen Shin Ches is one of the longer Simonim in Hilchos Shabbos, the longest being Hilchos Refuah. It's a different simon, but Shin Ches is right up there. Because Shin Ches is the laws of Muksa, and it goes through all these lists of things about is this Muksa, is not Muksa, why is it, what's the rules, etc. And this takes us all the way to Shin Ches Sif Mem Hei, 45. Most chapters go up to about 8, 10, 11. This goes up to 52. But number 45, it says, "Aser lischok b'Shabbos v'Yom Tov b'Chador." It is prohibited to play with a shot on Shabbos and Yom Tov with a ball. All right. Well, that's pretty explicit, right? All right. It's prohibited to play with a ball. Now, why is he prohibiting it? Right? Which chapter is this in? Right. So the chapter in Hilchos Yom Tov was the laws of carrying. What chapter is this? This is the chapter of Muktza. Right, so he's saying you're not allowed to play with the ball because the ball is muktza. So, what, based on what we know about Hilchos Muktza, what's going to be the claim against that?
It has no use.
Well, there is. You're asking me, there, right?
Yeah.
You're saying it does have a use.
Right.
Right. Number one, it has a use. Right. And B, what's the rule with what's the rule with anything with muktza? Right, there's always potential to make something that seems like it should be muksa, not muksa. Right? Right, if you want to pick up a stone and throw it at somebody on Shabbos for driving, right? So how can you do that without violating the laws of muksa? You can pick up the stone before Shabbos and say Hari Muchan Mzum Lakayim Mitzvah, right? And this stone is going to be usable for throwing at somebody on Yantif, right? On Shabbos. I'm not advocating that, but if you had such an urge,
yeah.
I would I would. would at least recommend you avoid the muksa prohibition before doing so. So anytime you have something that's muksa, you have the ability to slip out of that. So that seems like it should be pretty easy enough to do with a bull. So the Ramah comes along and says right away, "V'yish matir v'nagu lahakil." He says there are those that are matir this, and our minhag. I don't know what they're doing all Shabbos afternoon down there in Svat, but us up here in Krakow, right, we don't say the bulls are muksa, we allow people to push. Now, the Ramah's reasoning for allowing it is simply because it's what he calls a klisha malachto. Even if it's a klisha malachto lisser, it's something that has a use, right? So he's going to say it's usable, right? He doesn't see how it could fall under the prohibition of muksa. I saw today that Rav Avigdor Nevenzel they published a Mishnah Berurah which has his notes on the bottom, and he points out that he thinks that these might be the bulls in the Ramaz time, or how did they get bulls in the Ramaz time? I mean, bulls in the Gemara times came from like the heads of chickens somehow, right? But maybe they advanced past that, right? But how did they get bulls? I don't know. They took rubber bands. Whatever it is, they right. But he says, but if nowadays where you actually go and buy a bull in a store, and the bull is specifically something that is set aside for playing with on Shabbos, he thinks even the machaber would not have a claim that it would be muksa. I mean, it's very hard to make a claim that a bull that was set to be used as a bull is muksa. The only way you could put it in a quasi muksa category is to say, well, you're not allowed to play with it on Shabbos, right? So the Ramah is not willing to go there. The Ramah doesn't say that it's prohibited to go to play with a bull on Shabbos. So comes the Mishnah Berurah. So Mishnah Berurah is often the machmir in these kinds of things, and he says, well, there are reasons not to. He says, however, let's see, there's no muksa issue. He says you can't play it in Rishus Harabim because that's going to violate carrying. He says even in a Carmelis, you have to be careful because things might go outside. Even if you're in an Eruv, you have to be careful because it might fall outside the Eruv. I'm not sure you have to worry about that. Like here, but you know, if you're in the
Eruv stand, you're using your little
right. If you're in the Ekman's front yard, you might want to be concerned. Right, you might want to be concerned about that. Okay, and then the third thing he says is, and you know, to play soccer on a dirt field where you're going to be making many rivets in the ground, you should probably avoid that too. Right, but what does the Mishnah Berurah say? The Mishnah Berurah says brings up three technical problems that you have to avoid with playing ball on Shabbos. What does he not say?
He
doesn't say it's Shabbos thick. Right? He doesn't say your Shabbos clothes. He doesn't get into any of those things. Right? Mishnah Berurah is just saying that. Okay, so those are the technical. Those are technical issues. However, then there is this concept called Shabbos stick. So there is a pasuk in Yeshaya, a famous pasuk that says, "In tashiv mi Shabbos raglecha asos chafatzecha b'yom kachshi v'karasa l'Shabbos oneg likdosh Hashem mechubad." Right, you'll restrain your foot because of the Shabbos. That's the idea of walking slowly. Right, we've seen Zmiras posting books, Yakatanat. Right, that we take small steps on Shabbos. I don't know if anybody. I remember my. I have a cousin. Sort of, who is he's like kind of like we call him our cousin. I'm not sure he's actually technically related to us, but he's a mashkiach of yeshiva in Bayit Vegan, in the Teres Yisrael, and it's a Haredi yeshiva in Bayit Vegan, and so we go into him for Shabbos a few times, and he does walking home with him from shul. It's about a block long. It took us a half an hour. He took baby steps. And any time someone was walking, and this is Bayit Vegan, there are other Jews that live there, any time there was a Jew walking in the opposite direction, he would stop and, "Good Shabbos," and then like get going again. But it took a half an hour to walk a block because he was literally taking posimbo siyakit and not taking these short steps. And there's different ways that you speak, and there's different ways that you know. And at the end, right, the davar, there's different ways of speaking your words, which is the idea. Which is this is actually the sources for a lot of things like not preparing for after Shabbos, during Shabbos, perhaps a source for not speaking to non-Jews, right? You can speak to non-Jews, but not giving them directions to violate Shabbos, things like that. A lot of that finds its source within this pasuk.
What you said, non-Jews?
In this Yeshaya.
Giving directions?
I mean, to get the problem of Amir al-Akum might be based in this pasuk. The problem of giving non-Jews instructions on Shabbos for what to do.
This last line by not considering your affairs and speaking words.
Right.
You mean like directions in a car? Is that what you mean?
No.
No. To tell them to turn on the light.
Oh. I thought you meant car directions.
Okay, so that is really the source for this idea that there's things something called Shabbos day, to walk slower, speak differently, things like that. Not speak about business, avoid the discussion of things during the week. All that finds its source in this pasuk in Yeshaya. So comes the Aruch HaShulchan, and he says. So these balls, right, hakadurim, these balls, right, shemisachkin behem himuksa shari'inam ru'im litashmish. He says they're not fit for, he thinks that they're muksa. Va'af gam luksos behem kelim inam ru'im mifnei shehem mitunath and betit, va'afrit, even to cover them, luksos behem kelim, or to have use them to cover kelim you shouldn't do because they're usually filled with dirt that stick to them. Umeil the aser lisok gadurim b'shas. You shouldn't play with them. V'yesh omrim, there are those that say dekiyum deruim lisok uvischok in iser, right? That because they do have a use, you can play with them. There's no prohibition in that. Lemis an gimbaza, those that enjoy it. Lefichach mutarim betilpum masachkem behem, right? That therefore it would be mutter to carry. V'yesh matirim rak biyom tov v'lo b'shabes fein uiker. Those that allow it on yontov. On Shabbos, he doesn't think that that should make a distinction. V'chein ha-minug l'hakel. He says, and the minug is to be makel. The minug, apparently, in the Vardik, where he was the Rav, was that the kids would, where people would be playing ball. He doesn't necessarily only say kids. People would be playing ball. However, Amnam, b'yushalmi perik dalad the tainis. Hot the ear achas charva bishvil shahayu misachkin bekader b'Shabbos. He says, he quotes, there is a Yushalmi that talks about a city, whose name is not here on the page, that actually got destroyed. And why did it get destroyed? So the Yerushalmi says, Mishum de Mesachakim Bekadur. In our text of the Yerushalmi that's on our shelf, it says, because they played with balls. What do you mean they played with balls? So in the commentaries on the side, Yesh Omer B'Shabbos, V'Yesh Omer B'Chol. Some say it's because it was on Shabbos. It was... the city got destroyed because they played ball on Shabbos, and the other position is that they played ball during the week. Now there's an article recently that somebody was in the Safra movement and left the Safra movement, etc. So he talks there that he went to a Safra day camp, and he said he went to one of the more liberal camps because in his camp they were allowed to play frisbee. So I'm wondering that
the Shabbos.
No, not Shabbos. It sounded like even during the week they weren't. It sounded like they weren't allowed to play ball. I'm wondering if that's maybe based on this, that there was a city that was destroyed or playing ball. There's a Yesh Omrim that was even during the week, and therefore we should play ball ever. I don't know, but either way,
you can play frisbee. It's not a ball.
Yesh lahakel lischot befrisbee. Right. There are those that are lenient that will allow kids to play with the frisbee. Yeah. So.
Wow.
So there is this Yushami that talks about this town being destroyed, perhaps for playing ball, over the course of Shabbos. So he quotes that, and that is a source for an idea of Shabbistic things. We have this pasuk in Yeshaya, we have this concept that there was this town that was destroyed, and Shmir Shachska Hilchasa, a book that we turn to for many of our kulas over the course of Hilchas Shabbos. So here he says, Ein lasor misachke kador. We can't prohibit the playing of ball, right? Lahotzi misachik durgal afilu michutz labayis v'uadin legabi misachik tagis hashulchan. What is tagis hashulchan? Oh, he tells you ping pong, right? So he says we can't prohibit these things. So why does he say he can't prohibit these things? So he quotes the Aruch HaShulchan in the footnote saying. Yeah, Aruch HaShulchan's not so excited about it, right? People are not, there's this idea of not being so excited of having people play ball over the course of Shabbos. There was recently, Rabbi, you can listen to it online, on a Torah Web shir, Torah Web, not on YU Torah, there's a website called Torah Web, where they have mostly YU Rosh Yeshiva that have been given various shir. And a couple of months ago, Rabbi Willa gave a shir on sports. I think it was called Jews and Sports. I think that was the title of the shir. So in Rabbi Willa's classic style, this is Rabbi Mordechai Willa. senior.
Big guy.
Right. Long beard. And he himself plays plenty of ball. I remember playing in Marsha, in camp in Marsha Kolob many summers, playing basketball with Rabbi Willig. So he is very into adults playing ball during the week. He is, so the first section is that he has a section talking about importance of Jews being active. Full agreement, right? The next section is about Jews following other people that are very active, right? Being involved in following sports, which he has mixed feelings about. You could listen there for another time. And then he has a section where he discusses Shabbos, and he talks about how he thinks, you know, to tell kids that you can't play ball at all over the course of Shabbos, thinks it's okay. His kids play ball on Shabbos. He said he remembers kid growing up himself growing up in Kew Garden Hills. He says, I don't remember what happened, but I do remember walking into Mara very sweaty. Well, I'm not sure what was happening, but I remember I have that memory. But he kind of draws the line at adults, and he also, once a kid turns bar mitzvah, and as they get older, so perhaps you should be weaning them off. And he also draws the line at uniforms, right? To have organized sports with uniforms and jerseys and things like that. So he thinks that that already is beyond the line. And then the last section of the tape, he talks about sports bars, which he is also, as you can probably guess, not so excited about. So that is the there are some other sources about this, about the, you know, that raised the Shabbistic card. So the idea of saying, oh, it's not that, there is such a thing is out there. I took the paradigm of ball playing, but one could easily apply it to to the way we speak, and the way, you know, that pasuk in Yeshaya has other applications besides just playing with balls.
And who is Yeshaya?
Who is Yeshaya? He was a Navi.
So this is the prophet Yeshaya.
The prophet Yeshaya, yeah. That is a verse in the Bible, yes.
Yeah.
Right, sorry, yes.
I just realized he's saying tennis hashulchan, which is table tennis.
Oh, tennis hashulchan.
Which is the official name for ping pong.
There you go.
I think that's the legal name.
Tennis hashulchan, and for those Americans that may be reading this, ping pong, right. Okay. One more topic, this just to touch on, just because it was on my mind as we spoke about this over the course of Sukkos, so I figured I would just talk about it. And someone actually raised this shot to me recently, haven't worked into it. But the Chassam Sofer was asked about taking a trolley over Yatav. Now, the Chassam Sofer lived in the mid-1800s. I assume a trolley ride then meant that you were being driven by a horse, right? I assume, right? Okay.
Unless you're in San Francisco, which is a cable car.
Okay, no, maybe he was even. I mean, he was in. I'm not sure who he was riding to. He was lived in Pressburg, Hungary. I don't know what they had there, but the truth is, Sam Sofer Rochu was all over the world. But I actually looked because I was wondering if it was this fellow of Vitzal Ilaway who asked the Shaila, but the author of the writer was not in the Tshuva. Which often they are, but in this case they weren't. So he was asked, it is actually a very long tshuva, it is a very long long discussion about, I did not read through the whole thing, about the permissibility of using a cable car in Shabbos if everything's already paid for, and most of the people there aren't Jewish anyways. I mean, they're not driving it for you, they're driving it because it's the route, right? So perhaps is that okay? And he comes out at the end saying that at the end of the day, the only halachic issue I could come up with is this issue of tchumim, that maybe there should be a gezeirah that you sit on this thing because it's going to take you outside the tchum. That's such a big concern. I don't know. It's pretty hard to get outside the tchum. You could be careful about it. It's a little hard to make up such gezeiros today. I mean, we don't really have too many gezeiros. Plus, you might go outside the tchum. I mean, even going on an animal, we say, is maybe that's one of the reasons. But I think the main reason we don't go on animals is because you might pluck a thing off the tree in order to hit it, right? So he doesn't seem to limit it there. However, he then goes on to give the last paragraph about Shabbistik, and he says that he thinks that you would be in violation of Shvus Doraisa. Now, usually the term Shvus in Hilchos Shabbos is used to refer to a halacha de Rabbana. Right, we call that a shvus, talking to a we try to, when if we have to matir things, sometimes we'll say it's a shvus de shvus b'makom mitzvah. It's two derabbanans, Right, it's telling a non-Jew to do a violation of Derabanan, and there's a mitzvah, so therefore it's okay. So Shvus is usually referring to an Issur Derabanan, right? And he says that Shvus Doraisa, this might be a biblical violation of the requirement to rest on Shabbos. That is his, right? He just doesn't think it's a good idea that over the course of Shabbos you spend your entire day traveling all over the city on cable cars, even though you're not necessarily violating any malachas. So I think we can connect with that. He does not in that shuva, however, address what if you're doing it for the purpose of a mitzvah. He does not address that. That is addressed by his Talmud, Rabbi Tzal Ilway. So those were here over Sukkot, right? So you were here. I forgot if you were here or not. So the Rav in New Orleans. So this is number two. I think I talked about this, but here we can just see it inside. Number one was him assuring the Esrogim that they had in New Orleans during the Civil War. Number two is this Shaila, a lady very prominent and wealthy who, from being a hater of everything Jewish or that bore that stamp, had through his sermons and his efforts become a very pious mother of Israel, who kept a strictly kosher house, observed the Sabbath of the most orthodox fashion, lights, etc. Asked my father at the beginning of the hot season, which sets in early in the south, for those not aware, whether, as she lived at a great distance from the synagogue, could not walk in the summer months, she could remain away for that period, or whether she might ride thereto in the streetcar. He advised me that she should attend the synagogue, that she could ride thereto in the streetcar, but must not make any visits after service. Just ride to the synagogue and return again to her home as soon as the services were over. Though ridiculed for this by many of her friends, I'm not sure what she was ridiculed for. Was she ridiculed for violating?
Her friends are probably walking.
Right. Was it that, or was she making fun of her friends about that she's going straight home and not, like, hanging around and doing that stuff? Right. So, but though ridiculed by many of her friends, she observed the condition most faithfully. The grounds for the missions are not set down in writing, but besides the grounds which will suggest themselves to the Talmud Chacham, there was the other in the principal reason which my father mentioned to me, that she was so recent a convert that he did not want her to remain away from his sermons, from his admonitions for so long a period. Now, that's a self-confident Rav. Yes. It is also to be borne in mind that it was not necessary at the time that to pay the fare in money. It could be paid in tickets that could be purchased at any time. Okay, so that is thing. Number three, I just put on, because it's also fascinating. He would not permit the children of a man who was lost at sea on the steamer Morning Star that was wrecked between New York and New Orleans and who was last seen throwing a sofa into the sea and about to jump in after it to say Kaddish. I mean, he would not, there was somebody who was an Aguna. He was lost at sea, right? And he was an Aguna. He was lost at sea. His wife was an Aguna because he was lost at sea. But the last thing they saw was him jumping into the water onto a mattress. So he told the family that they could not say Kaddish for him. Why? Because if they Kaddish for him, then that might give the impression that we assume that he's dead, and therefore that might allow the wife to remarry when Al Pi Halacha she shouldn't yet remarry. This is the reason for it. She would have evidence that the wife was positively a widow and could remarry at her pleasure, whilst he held that according to Jewish law she was not such. Alright, so that is Vassal Illa. I have one more story to tell. It's not in print, but when I was in Phoenix, there was a member of our shul who was one of these residents who, one of these guys who have to, like, schlep into the hospital, like, you know, moments, no, right? So he would go in on Shabbos, right? He had call on Shabbos. So he stopped driving and started taking cabs, which is appropriate. I mean, especially, it wasn't that far away, so he would take cabs in every Shabbos. And then he asked me the following question. The hospital was about 4 miles from shul, 4 or 5 miles. Right, so not really walking, not legitimate standard walking distance. He said, "Can I ride my bike? Maybe it's better that I ride my bike rather than take a cab." So no, it's probably not, because riding your bike is probably an Isser Hotzah, right? The hospital is outside the Eruv, and every pedal is probably a violation of Hotzah. So then he came to me, and he said, okay, can I ride my roller? May I take my rollerblades? Oh, that's an interesting question, right? That already makes sense. So I asked the posik. Now I am going to pontificate as to what his reasoning was. So I'm not going to say who he was. You might be able to guess who he was, but I'm not going to say who he was. I asked him this question: is it better for him to take a cab, or is it better for him to ride roller skates? Taking a cab is a violation of Amir al-Akum, right? You're speaking to a Naju. Riding your roller skates doesn't seem to be a violation of anything, right? It's just not Shabbos stick. So he said to me, I wouldn't want my doctor. If I knew my doctor was riding to on roller skates, I wouldn't be happy about that. Especially in Phoenix in the hot sun. Like, I don't know. I said, like, he's a young guy. He's, you know, he's going to be there for many hours. No, no, no. I don't think that that's a good idea. So, I don't like, it seemed like a good idea to me. So I think his assumption was, is that, is this concept that, that to have, you know, this from guy riding on roller skates down the middle of the Jewish community on Shabbos, even though that might be better than, right, it's better for him to take a cab and do a Amir La'aklam rather than to kind of breach this communal, standard that we have.
He's going in the, under the conditions that he's a physician.
Right.
He's been summoned to the hospital.
Right.
So this isn't just a routine visit. It's that.
It's not that he's on
call. No, I mean, it was. It's on call. No, I mean, it's like.
It's on call. He's going to be.
It's not like it's an emergency. It's not. He needs. He has an 8-hour shift on Shabbos.
Got it.
Right. So whatever this, whatever one is supposed to do in that situation, right? He was asking this question, and I think that's why. After 8 years of thinking about this, I think that's what the issue was. I think that he better, you know, even though we'll in a way make up this reason and this precedent for that. There, this is another quick Phoenix story. There was somebody who I wasn't sure whether we were going to have a minyan. A late minyan Shavuos morning. That was the first day of Shavuos, the late minyan. So I asked someone what his story is. Or someone told me he'll be there. I sent out an email, who's going to come? And somebody wrote to me, he's going to be there. So I wrote back to this person, excuse me, you're supposed to be speaking in Scottsdale on the night of Shavuos. How exactly are you plan on getting back here in the morning? And the person wrote to me, what do you mean? I'm riding my bike. Right? I'm riding my bike. So so there is a tshuva of the Tzitz Eliezer about riding bikes on Shabbos, where he thinks it's not a good idea.
But this was Yantif. You mean Yantif?
This is on Yantif, yeah. No, it wasn't Shabbos, right? No, it was Yantif. There was no Erev issue. Right? So the Tzitz Eliezer says he doesn't think it's a good idea. Why is it not a good idea? And he gives a couple of reasons, like maybe he might go outside the Tchum, or maybe he might have to fix it. Like these kind of quasi-reasons that are out there that aren't... Push comes to shove, it's hard to say that that's really usher for those reasons. But in a sense, he's saying the same thing, that we might attach reasons to it, although the real reason is we just don't want people riding bikes and riding roller skates over the course of Shabbos. So that is that's my suggestion at the end. But the issue of Shabbos does exist, but of course it is going to be subject, somewhat subjective, based on community, based on age, and based on all sorts of factors. All right, well, thank you for coming.
You know your answer now for Shabbos.